And now, I'd like to bring up our main speaker. And I was told that if you want a good speech, or if you want an excellent speech, you could have either one. But if you want an excellent one, I understand that Hillary D. does take a bribe. So what we'd like to do, and if you're all in favor, we'd like to present him with a gift prior to speaking instead of after, if you're all in agreement. What do you say? Okay. I just met him yesterday, and let me say that I heard a little bit of his tape, and I am very anxious to hear him. You know, I sat with him through supper last night, and this, you know, I was thinking, this is what's so great about this program, that you get to meet other people from other areas, and it's just told me how you could relate so much to a simple program like this. Right now, I'd like to bring up Hillary D. from McCall, Alabama.
An opening gift.
He says I should open it. Have the motorcycle riders had anything to do with this?
Yes.
They look like Hell's Angels, but they turned out to be pussycats. Oh, Lord. Somebody told them.
This is going to determine the speech.
The Serenity Prayer says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can. I don't have to sit here and sweat. I can fan. And if that bothers you, that's your problem. I'm about to start wearing a ring in my ear. What? Oh. My name is Hillary Draper, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Good evening. So that tells you who I am and what I am. And when we got up this morning, the two of us said the who to the what, we ain't going to take a drink today. And that's the way it's been all day long. But it didn't used to be that way. It used to be that we got up and the who said to the what, we ain't going to take a drink today. And the what said to the who said so. And the who say, I said so. And the what would say, just you wait and see. And the what would get drunk and the who would have the hangover. Lest I forget my manners, let me thank the committee, whoever had anything to do with getting me to Lake Michigan and Zion. I've been trying to keep a low profile because I understand y'all have cross burners in this part of the world. In our big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, you will excuse me if I read two paragraphs. It's from chapter 11. It says, for most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It means joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. Oh, But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that his loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And what I'm supposed to do tonight is stand up here and tell you how, through the care of a loving God, whom I now choose to call higher power, and trying to practice the principles of this blessed program in all my affairs, a day at a time, and with the help of many of you people, Hillary Draper has been able to change. Hillary Draper has been able to change his terror into joy, his bewilderment into certainty, his frustration into fulfillment, and his despair into hope. I used to go around and say, my name is Father Hillary, and I'm an alcoholic. And one of my sponsors, by the way, I really have enjoyed this conference. It's been a different conference from the kind that I generally get to. You all really cram it into it, I'll tell you. 24 hours a day. Lord have mercy. And that Tom wanted to know if I'd be there at 1 a.m. this morning. I told him, no way. I don't want what you got that bad. But I really have learned this weekend, and I'm going back home a lot more steeped in this glorious program than I was when I came. And so I thank you for letting me come in here. I was reminded of that when I said sponsorship. I've had great sponsors. I've had sponsors that I didn't even ask to sponsor me, who took one look at me and decided I needed them. And I'm grateful that they did. But I had a sponsor, and he said to me, huh, there you are going around saying your name is Father Hillary, like you something. So you better get up there and say, your name is Hillary Draper and you ain't nothing but a drunk. Ooh, I thought that over and I didn't like that one bit. But I've come to the conclusion that he is absolutely correct. And I stand up and I say, my name is Hillary Draper. And I am a drunk. I am a grateful, recovering alcoholic. And it is only because of this blessed program that Hillary Draper, the drunk, can take on the role of Father Hillary, the monk and the priest. And for that, I'll be everlastingly grateful. I was born at a very early age in a good Christian home. I've heard so many drunks say that that I'm not sure it's anywhere to raise children anymore. In fact, I heard it said on the East Coast that alcoholism is a disease contracted by Roman Catholics of Irish descent and treated in the basements of Methodist churches. But that's not true, because in Alabama, we got a lot of foot washing Baptists here in our program. But be that as it may, you know, I cannot tell you when I had my first drink. It was always there. We were Roman Catholics, and I was quoting Chesterton earlier this evening at the table. Chesterton says, wherever a Catholic sun doth shine, there's sure to be laughter and good red wine. At least I've always found it so, Benedict Amus Domino, which means thanks be to God. I mean, you see, with us, drinking was a sort of religious activity. We had drinks for baptisms, We had drinks for First Holy Communion. We had drinks for confirmation. We surely had drinks for weddings, for funerals, for ordinations. The only thing we didn't take drinks for was going to confession. And some of us took drinks to steady our nerves to get ready for that. So I have to say that alcohol was always in our family. And we did not drink every day. But we did not think that drinking in moderation was wrong, was morally evil. Make no mistake about it. We Catholics think getting drunk is seriously morally wrong, just like the Baptists and some of the Methodists do. But if I had to give you the philosophy that I grew up with about drinking in my town, in my home, it was this. You drank as much as you want, as often as you want, whenever you wanted, as long as you wanted, but you do not get drunk. They don't laugh at that because there are an awful lot of my relatives and people of my persuasion in Mobile, Alabama, who still operate under that philosophy and who are non-alcoholics. And who are non-alcoholics. If it could have been said of anybody that he had a wonderful education as how to drink as a gentleman, it should have been me. It was always there. Not that we drank every day. We didn't. I had a grandfather who had two drinks before supper for, I'm sure, 45 or 50 years. I never saw him drunk in my life. I never saw him even pixelated. Never. You know? But why am I a drunk? Why am I an alcoholic? I had a great big relationship and six or seven aunts. They had their own population explosion. And we had one uncle, called him Harry, who was kind of the leader of the pack whenever he had to face that tribe for weddings or funerals. And he'd always be taking one more drink to steady his nerves. But he'd get so steady he couldn't move. But watch, here would be the education. I can remember my mother saying to us children after those things, "You saw Uncle Harry last night. If you find that drinking does that to you, you just don't drink. But you saw the rest of your uncles and aunts, perfect ladies and gentlemen." You see what I'm talking about? And why am I an alcoholic? Me, what am I doing an alcoholic? After I'd been in the program some 2 years, I asked the group at Kelman why I was an alcoholic. And this great silence came over the group. When they all know the answer and they're waiting to see who's going to zap the fool. You know the sound. And finally, my sponsor, Juby, says, "Well," I said, "with my splendid aristocratic background, if the truth were known, degenerate southern aristocracy, I was given a tender, loving God by tender, loving people. I was a wanted child. I wasn't a surprise to my mother and father. They were delighted when I appeared on the scene. A splendid education, an eminent divine, at least of the second water. What am I doing? I'm drunk." Finally, Juby says, amid the silence, "Oh, hell, Father Henry. It don't make no difference how the jackass got into the ditch. Just get him out." Isn't that marvelous? You talk about psychology. Lord have mercy. I taught psychology for years, you see, and what happened is this is absolutely, it flies in the face of Aristotelian Thomistic philosophy in the past 2,000 years. And I'm sure Thomas Aquinas has turned over in his grave 1,000 times. Because, you see, philosophy always taught, psychology, you straighten out the thinking and the acting will follow. And here come Bill and Dr. Bob, they say, "Y'all got that wrong." Straighten out the acting, and the thinking will follow. Act as if. We tell newcomers, "Go to the meeting." "I don't want to go to the meeting." "What good is it going to do me if I don't go? If I don't want to go?" I say, "I don't know, but go." "It can't possibly do me any good if I don't want to go." "Yes, it can." "How?" "I don't know." "Go to the meeting. Bring the body." Isn't that fascinating? I read this somewhere that said, you know, alcoholics knew they were sick, and they kept going to doctors, and doctors kept killing them. And alcoholics got tired of being killed by doctors. So two of them got together and figured out how to get well. And the medical profession has never forgiven them. Oh, Lord, have mercy. My father was dead when I was 4 years old. I, to know today, I resented God for that. A lot of people lose their parents for one reason or another. They adjust. I never adjusted. I think it was because people helped me not adjust. The poor child. He lost his daddy. He doesn't have any daddy. Now, if you want to know what it's like to be born with a gold spoon in your mouth, just to be born the youngest son of a widowed southern mother. Lord have mercy, doubled in spades, oh. I learned how to be a people pleaser early on. You do what they tell you, then do what you want. The poor child, he doesn't have a father. Oh, Lord, that towering ego of mine just went straight up. I mean, they petted me. I was, you know, treat me easy. I was raised a pet. Oh, God help us. It was terrible. A towering ego, always getting my own way, always wanting my own way. A mess. I was not a well-adjusted child. I was a mess. I was always wanting to be something I wasn't. I was a bright kid. I could learn. But I was not an athlete. I still can't coordinate very well. You know, and machinery, I have to call the electricians to change the light bulbs. And that's just beyond me. But, you know, but when I was 15 years old, my mother felt I needed more men in my education. And so she sold me up the river from Mobile, Alabama, to the tender mercies of the Benedictine monks at Coleman, and I never got away. Homesick, oh Lord. But be that as it may, I soon got in with the families of my schoolmates. And in those long ago halcyon days, every housewife with a name in Coleman knew how to squeeze the grape and make that German-type grape juice. Only they did it with strawberries. And if you all never tasted Coleman County strawberry wine before you got an AA, it's just too late. The most glorious color of red I ever saw in my life. An aroma, when you took the cork out of the bottle, you could smell it two blocks away. A kick like the proverbial Missouri mule. No harm. You were in somebody's home, a small glass of wine, a piece of cake. Wonderful. In 41, I loved everything about Coleman so much. I loved everything about St. Bernard so much. I asked him if I could be a monk. They said I could try. And in June of 41, they took me in. And then they began to reveal the 33rd degree secrets. And among the most important was that the monks were not about to be outdone by the housewives of Coleman. And they too knew how to squeeze that grape and make that German-type grape juice. And they made a little homebrew on the side. You talk about a revelation to the Gentiles. Lord have mercy. The reason I say that is because the big book says, in the opinion of the doctor, page 26, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. I already knew what that effect was. As an altar boy, God forgive us, oh Jesus, Mary and Joseph. You know, they have a small cruet of wine, and it's got to be pure wine, but generally it's very nasty tasting, and so an ordinary priest will never use very much of it. And we altar boys are told, don't dare put it back in the bottle because it might rot the rest of it, and you couldn't throw it away for waste, so what did you do with it? Well, of course. And being a kid, 10 or 11 years old, you could walk 2 feet above the pavement all the way home. You know, dear God in heaven, see, there we are. The reason I have to tell you this part, too, is because alcoholism is a disease. It's progressive. We do not really know very much about it. Some people think, and I've heard it in this conference, that you're born that way and all you have to do is add the alcohol. Some people think that anybody can be alcoholic. You just have to drink heavy enough, long enough, consistently enough. You know, if you want what we've got, then you can try to get it. I happen to believe that, but be that as it may. But there are certain signs, you know. And for example, one of them is this towering ego. Another one is that drinking seems to do more for us than other people. But let me tell you, a Satan sign, almost. Here I was in the monastery, and we were having a Christmas party, and it was a lovely affair. But the next morning, when I get up at 4 o'clock, we had a very athletic spirituality in those days. Thank God we were over that kick. But I'm up at 4 o'clock to go for prayers, and when I'm thinking, meditating, it occurs to me we had that Christmas party last night, and it didn't get over till 11:30, but I don't remember anything after 8:30. You see, I didn't tell you, my pattern of drinking was established by the time I was 18 years old. I always drank as much as I could, as often as I could, whenever I could. I really never had much of a problem with the morning after drink, because I never had anything left, or if I did, I couldn't find it. But there it was. It meant more to me. I was always wanting to know, the monks didn't drink every day, but on feast days, Gewürztraminer, if you know that German word, come together for conversation, sausages, and home brew, homemade wine, pink lemonade for the panty waist. But it meant more to me. I was always saying, I went to the lesson, well, here it is Christmas, and there's 3 hours that I don't remember anything. Last thing I remember, they were singing right before Christmas, good little act. I'd slip around and find out what did happen, and apparently nothing. Then I stayed till the last shot was fired, performed, quote, normally. But there I am, with a phenomenon of memory loss, and I've got to account for it. Now, I'm convinced that I knew way back in the back of my mind that alcohol had something to do with that. But see, at that time, I loved everything there was about alcohol so much, I wasn't about to admit that it could do anything bad. I'm also convinced today that if I could have talked to anybody about that phenomenon, and they might have said to me, you're one of these people that's got this mental obsession and this physical compulsion, and you're never going to be able to handle alcohol. Maybe I could have been spared the agonies that were to come. I don't know. But that's water over the dam and under the bridge. Can't do a thing about it. But I don't talk to anybody about it. But again, being an intelligent kid, I got to figure out, what caused that? I came to the conclusion it was the cheese. You laugh. Cunning, baffling, powerful. We're cunning, baffling, and powerful. We're the last ones to admit. Everybody knows he's a drunk. He's an alcoholic. His wife knows it. His kids know it. His boss knows it. His priest knows it. His dog knows it. You ever see an alcoholic dog? Cats are dumber. The man at breakfast said he found out a stupid cat that he had to live with. You know? The dog won't stay in the room with a drunk. Get out of the way quick. You know, but we're the last ones, the last ones. I kept saying, I can quit drinking any time I want to. And people kept saying to me, well, why the hell don't you want to? You sure ought to. But there I am, experiencing blackouts at 18 years old, 19 years old. And that is almost a certain sign that you've got it. If you have experienced what I've just described, now make sure you understand it's not passing out. Passing out, you drink. The body, in order to save its own life, short-circuits some of the system. You pass out quietly, slide under the table. There you stay till the next morning until somebody helps you home. That is not blacking out. That's passing out, and I've done that too. But in the blackout, you drink. The body again to save out its own life, short-circuits some of the system. This time you go into, quote, temporary amnesia. We continue to function, quote, normally, quote. And I got news for you. If you have experienced that, then maybe you ought to move your letter over from the Al-Anon room to us. I'm serious. There I am. See? I got it. It's a disease. It's progressive. That means it gets worse, not better. If I've crossed that invisible line between social drinking and alcoholic drinking, for years I was a social drinker. Anytime anybody said, I'm going to have a drink, I would say, so shall I. But if I've crossed that invisible line and I continue to drink, then I will progress to one of three ends. Either I will end up dead drunk, in the literal meaning of those two words. And if I end up dead drunk, it will take everything I've got. Secondly, I can end up in what is euphemistically called custodial care. In Alabama, that means they send you to Tuscaloosa and it's not to go to the university. Thirdly, I quit. And what happened to me is what happens to so many alcoholics. When I came to the point that I wanted to quit, that I knew I had to quit, when I reached what for me was my bottom, I discovered to my horror that I could not quit. Oh, Lord. I was ordained a priest in 47. By that time, I'm crossed that line. I don't have to drink every day, but every time I drink, it's rather disastrous. Not always, but most of the time. But then it's abnormal drinking. Believe me, if there are any overt signs that Hillary Draper was an alcoholic, he would not have been called to orders. The Catholic Church has got enough trouble without ordaining drunk monks. I'm getting these terrible ego problems with the boss man. I was the associate principal of the fancy prep school that we were running. We had a new boss come in, and would you believe one of the first things he did was to fire me. I got a geographical cure removal before I knew what that was. Can you imagine? Don't pay any attention. I don't need that thing anyway. I got a letter. We lived in the same house on the same hall, but we weren't talking to anybody, to one another. Does that recognize you? And the letter said, go to Barberville, Kentucky. And I said, where in God's holy name is Barberville, Kentucky? And some wag of a monk says, you go to hell, turn right, and walk 3 miles. He was wrong. It was only 2 miles. It's where Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia come together. The Cumberland Gap area. Can you hear me back there? I don't want you to miss any of this. The first morning I was there, Father Timothy, who I was replacing, God rest his soul, we had said mass, and he said, you have your meals next door at Aunt Sally Coon's house. Her husband is a retired miner. He's a Catholic, and he takes care of the property while you ride in the circuit. Aunt Sally belongs to the Lottie Moon Circle. But whenever you're home, they feed you. So we go over. A miner's cabin, hot September. We were in the kitchen. Uncle Albert seated at the head of the table. Nice old man in his 60s. I'm 60 now. A retired miner. Timothy, myself, Uncle Albert's son, 36 years old, a state trooper. All he had on was a pair of shorts. His two sons, 16, 18, that same way. Conversation was difficult. Sitting in front of me was a water tumbler with the beans on it, you know, nice and cold. And I picked it up and took two great big swallows. Well, you've seen the atomic bomb blast. I couldn't see. There was this roaring in my ears. The hair stood up on the back of my neck. The whole place was shaking. I'm convinced today if I hadn't been an alcoholic, I would have screamed bloody murder. But all I do is hang on tight till the tremble starts. I'm not making this up. And when I could see again, Uncle Albert had a glass, Timothy had one, the trooper had one, the kid didn't. Well, we were walking back to the church after breakfast, stepping high over the leaves. And I said to Father Timothy, in the Lord's holy name, what was in that water glass? He said, moonshine, 120 proof. I said, for breakfast? He said, anytime you can get it. I was in the mountain 5 years, and I bloomed. What a marvelous place to send a budding alcoholic, you know. I said I didn't get into any trouble in the mountains. That's not true. I didn't get in any jail, but I, you know, serious alcoholic drinking takes time. And you can't do the job you're supposed to do if you're an alcoholic. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous is so important. He talks about service. Wait. We need all this business to fill up those vacant places where we were drinking all the time. Make no mistake about it. That's why we need to go to all the meetings. That's why we need to get involved. That's why we need to work with the other alcoholics. That's why we need sponsors. 5 years and I'm returned to the college as dean. By this time I'm hooked. I gotta have it. I don't have to drink it, but I gotta have it in the closet. Where I can shake it, look at the frog eyes, read the label. Why you gotta have it? Well, in case of snake bites, the Hungarian Freedom Fighters Day. The pattern's the same. Whenever I start, I don't quit. So I'm either too sick to drink anymore or there's nothing left to drink. 5 years again, these terrible personality crashes are up. I get another geographical cure removal, this time to the delta of the Mississippi. Now, if you think that's in southwest Louisiana, you are mistaken. It begins in the lobby of the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee. It goes down the river, 20 miles on the Arkansas side, 40 miles on the Mississippi side, and you come to Yazoo City. And if you all haven't lived down there, you don't know the South. Those people don't even know the Civil War was fought, much less lost. And they couldn't care less. This was the long, hot, dry summers of the 60s. Dry. Mississippi was dry. Wettest dry state I ever spent. I had a terrible time with empty bottles. I saved them. That should have told me something. An ordinary drinker doesn't save old whiskey bottles. He throws them away. But not me. And every time I opened the closet, it was full of whiskey bottles, empty. I'd say, somebody's putting those in there. Can't be me. But there I was in Shaw, Mississippi. I could pick up the telephone and say, Mamie. And she'd say, be right there, Father. Now, when I tell you that story, Father Malachy says, be sure that they all know that Mamie was the bootlegger. You're a little slow tonight. And Mamie would come, take the dead soldiers out, give them decent Christian burial, put in new recruits, and send your bill at the end of the month. Had it made the change. Oh, Lord have mercy. Except just like the big book, I was coming apart at the seams. I was coming apart spiritually. I was supposed to be a preacher, a man of God, filling a pulpit. And I couldn't stand myself. Every time I was drinking, I was getting drunk. I never intended to get drunk in my life. And always I'd say it's going to be different this time. And it always was. It was white. And the people were going to talk ugly about me. Priest, Father Hillary, you better be careful with your drinking. It's the 40 hours. You couldn't get home. Coming apart mentally. Lying, lying, lying. Have to lie. Emotionally. Physically. I never came upon physically. Maybe it's because I was so fat. I don't know. But I never came upon physically. But the others, yes, yes, yes. It was awful. It was awful. All kinds of nasty things happening. Here's a good one. The parish council. Where is the automobile? It's not your car. It belongs to the church. It cost us $8,000. Where is the car? We want the car. I don't know where the car is. Did you leave it in Memphis? I have lost the car since I've been in AA. I don't aim to lose anymore. Oh, Lord. We had a new boss back in Coleman, Dan Yankee from Minnesota, came down to save us. I couldn't stand it. Today I love him. He proved to be my savior, really. But he was kind of dumb. I've been nominated as president of the college. He came over and interviewed me and told his aide-de-camp he was well satisfied he's going to accept the nomination. I got the nomination as president of the college. Any sane man with my track record up to that time would say, no, I can't be president of the college. I got a little problem. It's causing me a lot of trouble. But what does the charity mean? You go to the alcoholic and say, fight me, I'll take that job. You don't think they'd be offering it to a drunk? That'll show these people whether or not I'm a drunk. They gave me a glorious send-off. I know today they were saying, thank God he's gone. But again, because of this program, because of higher power, I've been able to make amends that I can go back to Mississippi and hold up my head. And I'm grateful for that. But I came back to Coleman as president of the college. And everything that hadn't already happened to me as an alcoholic happened. Oh, Lord, the next 3 years were horrendous. I'm not going to tell you anything except one thing. I have heard so many alcoholics say they've been in jail in every state in the Union. I've only been in one, and I don't ever want to go again. Whenever I went out, I always wore my Roman collar and my black suit. I don't know whether that was saying to me, you won't drink so bad. And now that I'm in AA, I always wear my collar and my suit. And if that upsets people, I said, look, I never took it off when I was drinking. I'm sure not going to take it off here. And if that bothers you, I'm sorry. And it does bother some people in the South. They think AA is run by the Catholics. But anyway, here I am. I wake up this morning at 3 o'clock, and I say to myself, it's a funny bed you're laying on. No mattress. I see some of y'all recognize it. No pillow. And when I get my eyes open, there's bars at the window. And I thought, oh, Lord, you played hell this time. And I resented the man that built that jail. When I got up and looked out that window, the way they built it, I couldn't tell if I was in Mobile, New Orleans, Montgomery, Birmingham, Nashville, Memphis, or Rome, Italy. And I know about you all up here, but in the small towns in the South, there's always some person who is the Catholic Church. And in this small town, it turned out the Catholic Church was Mr. Frank. And they called up Mr. Frank and said, we got a priest in jail down here, drunk and disorderly. What do you want to do with him? And Mr. Frank says, leave him there, I'll get him in the morning. Well, now, I have to tell you this because when they took me out of the cell and took me down to see the sergeant, and there was Mr. Frank, I would like you to know that I just as soon to have seen the Pope. Mr. Frank was the chairman of the board of trustees of the college of which I was president. And there he is, coming to fish his hot shot college president out of the poker. And poor Frank, he's gone to heaven now. God rest him. I conned him. I made him in the neighbor. He says, Father Harry, we got to do something about this. I said, it was the cheese, Frank. I was just out of the country club and stayed too long, ate too much cheese. That's all. Hell, I wrecked the car. Did the cheese wreck the car? But I got away with it. I got away with it. A year went by and then came the end. The president of the college was to give the State of the Union message in front of about 300 people. The Board of Trustees, all the monks faculty, the lay faculty, the Student Government Association, you called out the important people, they were there. And I made that speech after dinner. The only thing is, that day, the last thing I remember, it was 4:30 in the afternoon, and I was taking one more drink to steady my nerves. And when I tell you that, I can begin to sweat and shake, because I can have some idea of what it must have been like for those marvelous people to have to sit there and watch and listen to the obviously drunken Catholic priest president of the college. That was my bottom. I figuratively slit my throat from ear to ear. I noticed that the atmosphere on the campus was a little cool the next morning. The Board of Trustees had had a secret called meeting on which there was only one point on the agenda, namely the resignation of the president, effective immediately. And when I went to see the chairman, the chancellor, throwing dust and dirt to hide things, like we all do, he said, sit down, I want to say something to you. And he read me the riot act in 4 or 5 gorgeous technicolor scenes. He told me that I had disgraced my own name, the good name of my family, that I was an absolute penance to those monks. He told me that I was a no-good drunk, that I had disgraced my priesthood, that I ought to have better sense. Oh, it was terrible. It was horrible. He didn't know alcoholism. He said, you cannot stay here. We are through with you. We don't want you anymore. We have no intention of putting up with this kind of conduct. I'll help you get a job anywhere in the country as a teacher. You're a good teacher, but you cannot stay here. What I wish you'd do is go somewhere, get some help with your drinking problem. He doesn't even know the word alcoholism. I don't know whether I was so scared, so sick and tired, so ashamed, so desperate, so frightened, that I said yes. I'd go anywhere, do anything. I never knew for a long time what let me catch the moment of grace. Because I'm convinced that if I had stayed in my pride and walked away, I wouldn't be alive today. If I was alive, I'd be nuts. I couldn't have stood the burden of guilt. I'm convinced today that it was because of all the Al-Anon type people who loved me so desperately and who knew nothing to do for me except to pray. And therefore I love Al-Anon today as much as I do AA. I got sent to a place called Hazelden, up in the wilds of the cold north woods of Minnesota. And my dry date is January the 14th, 1968. And when I got to Minneapolis, it was 30 degrees below zero with a wind chill factor that made it 52. And I had just come from Birmingham where it was 68. I nearly froze to death. I couldn't go to the bathroom for 2 weeks. I did not know what they did to you to try to treat you for alcoholism. I didn't know whether they cut something out of you, whether they stuffed something up in you, whether they blew through your ears, whether they turned your head around. I didn't know. I know today they're all what I call gold-plated fast traps. They'll take you in, dry you out, introduce you to the pills, and turn you loose to run a game. There are no such things as AA treatment centers, but there are treatment centers that use this blessed program of the 12 steps. And that was Hazelden in those years. In 68, it was a 3-week program. The first morning I was there, and I'm going to quote, this sounds rude, but I'm just quoting. I went to see the counselor. That's not true. They took me to see the counselor. And the first thing he said to me was, "Now, Father Hillary, that's the last time we'll call you Father, because you ain't nothing but a goddamn drunk." You know, I was going to call up the abbot and say, "You know, these people are blasphemers as well as profaners." He said, "You got no right to wear that Roman collar or that black dickie. You're not a priest in good standing. Take it off." You see the tiny ego up there in a drunk tank? And the second thing he says is, "Don't plan on 3 weeks for this program." Well, I said, "Of course not. I reckon I'll get it in two." I was in a hurry. Oh, he says, no, we find for doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, pharmacists, undertakers, salesmen, college professors, it takes 3 and 4 times as long to get this simple program." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because y'all keep up such a dreadful front. It takes a long time to find out where the real Hillary Draper lives." And they were right. Oh, Lord have mercy. They gave me the big book. That's not true. They sold it to me. They said, "Read it." But as soon as I got it, I opened it up to see if it had an imprimatur from a Catholic bishop, you know, saying it was kosher. And it didn't. And I said, "A dollar to a dime, it's Baptist literature printed in Nashville. They're going to brainwash me and I will not read it." And I wouldn't. I would not read the big book. No. Let me try and tell us what that was. Because at the same time, they sold us a little 24-hour-a-day book. Y'all know that? And that doesn't have an imprimatur from a Catholic bishop. But I loved it. I read it all the time. I wouldn't read that big book. No stuff. You were not going to brainwash me. Now, the only thing they did up there is they had 3 meetings a day. I'm happy to report they started on time. I would not read the big book. No. Let me try and tell us what that was. Because at the same time, they sold us a little 24-hour-a-day book. Y'all know that? And that doesn't have an imprimatur from a Catholic bishop. But I loved it. I read it all the time. I wouldn't read that big book. No stuff. You were not going to brainwash me. Now, the only thing they did up there is they had 3 meetings a day. I'm happy to report they started on time. I couldn't resist that. And they ended on time. Because they said we would know it was self-hubbed. But be that as it may, as I told you, it lasted 3 weeks on Maryland. Well, after about the 6th week, it became apparent to my cunning alcoholic brain that if I didn't take the first 5 steps, that I was going to be there until Gabriel blew his horn. And so one night I sat up all night and read the first 164 pages and reread them. Oh, Lord! Chrissy, I'd been listening for 5 weeks. After breakfast, I stopped down to the counselor's room. I says, "I got it. I got step one. My life's a man in drugs. Hollis over alcohol." He says, "You ain't got nothing. Get back." I said, "I have got step one." He says, "You are loaded with resentment." I said, "I don't resent anybody." Well, they were so right. I resented God. I resented the Pope. I resented the Bishop. I resented the Abbot. I resented all the monks of St. Brendan. I resented everyone. Right. Absolutely correct. God bless and save me. He talked about acceptance. It took me, I believe, really 2 years until I got to the master teachers at Coleman, Alabama, where everything I learned at Hazelden up here could get down here before I was comfortable with standing up and saying, "My name is Hillary Draper and I am an alcoholic." Man, that was hard for me. I hated that. They'd get on me. I'd say, "My name's Hillary Draper." And they'd say, "What are you?" Oh, Lord. But eventually, I got the first 3 steps. The third step was a joy for me. really. I thought God had walked away from me, and of course, he was there all the time. And it just took 8 days to get me back introduced to him. Step four, I took a stretching and fearless moral inventory. I did it. Took it to the man, he says, oh hell, you've made another mistake. You've taken an immoral inventory. Said, put down the good and the bad. I said, I can't think of anything good. He said, didn't you love your mother? I said, yeah. He said, put it down. Oh, they were terrible. Fifth, admitted to God, myself, and other human beings. He said, I've been used to doing that all my life. I'm a Catholic. We know what sin is, what shortcomings are. We admit them to God, to ourselves, and to a priest. But we do it anonymously. In a confessional, with a grill and a curtain. And if you change your voice, you can really be anonymous. But an AA comes along and says, you do it eyeball to eyeball. And that do make a difference. Parenthetical remark for you Catholics in the audience. Have you noticed how the church has caught up to AA? And you can now receive the sacrament of penance eyeball to eyeball? But let me tell you what my experience has been with that. When I get penitents who come in and say they want to go to confession sitting down looking at me, and I give them a blessing, the first thing they do is say, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And I say, yeah. Isn't that awesome? Anyway, I got through the fifth step finally. I'll never forget this. You see, I'm not the first priest who ever had a problem with drinking in Alabama. If we could ever get them sober, somehow or another, we never let them return to the scene of the crime. We send them to Louisiana, Texas, Idaho. Go west, young man, go west. I get through the fifth step, and the man says, now, if you really believe you're an alcoholic, when you go back to Coleman, you're going to tell people you're an alcoholic. I said, of course not. That's the stupidest question I ever heard. We don't run around the south of the back saying, oh, watch out for me, I got tuberculosis. No. I said, Plato, you know I can't go back to Coleman. He says, why can't you go back to Coleman? He said, well, you're running around with women. I've just taken a fifth step. I said, no. He said, did you embezzle the college's money? I said, no. He said, so you lost the job as president of the college, you were thrown out of the priesthood because of the disease of alcoholism. When are you going to quit running? The bank president might have to go back. Not the president of the bank, but to pick up the pieces. I said, all right, I'll go back. Now you convince the board of trustees and the chancellor to let me come back. And you know what? He did, they did, and I did. I wish I could tell you, I told you about sobriety date in January. I was in Hazelden, I don't know, 9, 10 weeks, something like that. But they wouldn't let me come right straight home. They sent me to a halfway house, and that was fine. I finally got back to Coleman on September, someday. I forget when it was. I wish I could tell you that I found AA right away, went up the steps, it was glory hallelujah. That's not true. I couldn't find it. We didn't have a daily newspaper. You weren't in the phone book. And so I stayed a loner from September till January. A priest who loved me very much, not an alcoholic, used to say to me, aren't you supposed to be going to some kind of meeting? I said, yeah, but they don't have them in Coleman. He says, well, surely they must have them in Decatur. That's only 35 miles up the road. I said, but I don't need them. Look what I've learned. And believe me, in those years, the insurance didn't pay it and Hazelden wasn't free. What have I learned? You see, I'm convinced that if a treatment center will take us in, dry us out thoroughly, convince us to go on a regular basis to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, we will get better despite anything else they've done. But along in January, that same priest came to me. He says, AA's alive and well in Coleman. Here's the phone number. Call them up. 3 days. Every day he said to me, you call? I said, yeah, they don't answer. Well, he finally found that to get the right answers from alcoholics, you have to ask the right questions. And he says, when are you ringing? I said, midnight. I'm not proud about it, I'm not making it up. He says, call now. I rang the phone and I got my sponsor. This is my sponsor today. And I said, Mr. D, this is Father Hillary out of the college. I'm an alcoholic. I need to go to an AA meeting. There was a long silence on the line. And the first thing Juby ever said to me over that phone was, Father, Are you drunk now? Notice the realism of this program. That was the important question. I said, no. He said, well, it just so happens we have a meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. I will be along at 7:30 to pick you up. Notice the smart sponsorship. He doesn't tell me where the meeting is. He doesn't tell me to get there. He says, I will pick you up at 7:30. And I said, fine, but don't come to the front door of the college. I'll meet you down on the road to the cemetery under the pine trees at the top of the mountain in front of the duck house. Again, I'm not proud of that. But if you come to Coleman, I'll show you the road to the cemetery and the tall pine trees and the dark of the moon. Well, Jimmy came and picked me up to go to my first AA meeting. I wish I could tell you, I went up the steps and it was glory, hallelujah, never, oh, it was horrible. It was a little old room about as big as that corner. The plaster was coming down off the ceiling. The wallpaper was rolling down. One naked light bulb hanging there, hole in the floor where they swept the dirt down. A nasty old sofa with the springs coming out. About 13 people that looked like foot washing Baptists, the Church of Christ to me. And I thought, oh Lord, I'm in the wrong place for sure. If I could just get out of here. Lord, Lord. Again, Juby, the good sponsor, had disappeared. And I wasn't about to walk 2 miles back to the college. And while I'm standing there looking through the door at this, here comes a lady. Dressed up, just looked like $1 million. Now, I had known her as a fine Catholic matron from Decatur. I did not know that she was an AA. I had worked with her on church affairs before. She walked up to me, and she put her arm through my arm, and she said, come on, Father Hillary. You're right where you belong. We're so glad to have you. Come in, you're going to be all right. And she put her arm through my arm, and she mesmerized me right through the door of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I did not know for 2 years that that woman was a shill, and it was all a put-up job. That after I called Juby, he called Decatur. And he said, Rosemary, come down here at Coleman tonight. I need you. She says, I can't. I got to chair my own meeting. He says, the hell with that. I got a Catholic priest coming in here tonight. I don't know a thing about Catholics, much less priests. You're a Catholic, and you get down here and help me with him. And when the poor, drunken priest is trying to stumble through the doors of AA in Coleman, there's Rosemary. Rosemary's still in the program. She's not well physically. But I'll walk a long way for Rosemary. And I shudder to think what my pride and my ego might have done to me if that woman hadn't been there that night. Don't talk to me about coincidences. I only see them as the miracles, the small miracles, where God prefers to remain anonymous. That was the beginning. That was the beginning. You know, you talk about this big book, and we talk about it's only the symptom. Yeah, all this thing's working again. Hey, hooray. You know, it says here, pay attention, and I'm almost done there. It says, this, that means drunkenness, is repeated over and over. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Can experience an entire psychic change. It was in the grapevine 2 years ago. It says, if a drunk son of a bitch comes into Alcoholics Anonymous and all he gets is sobriety, then all he is a sober son of a bitch. And that will explain a lot of people in our club room. The alcohol is but a symptom. And we're going to have to go to work on the living problem. It was the beginning for me. And I can't tell you what a glorious experience it has been. I've made every mistake that you could possibly make in the book, except I haven't taken a drink. And thank God for that. I remember very well one time asking him, you know, how about this one? This will get them. I've been sober and dry now 3 years. If I don't manage my own life, who's going to manage it? I see you know the answer. And the silence came, and Juby spoke up, and he says, well, Father, there is a third step, which says, made a decision to turn our wills and our lives over to the care of God, as we understand. And then we got the 11 steps, thought through prayer and meditation. I said, stop. Don't tell anybody I asked that question. Here I am, a trained theologian, an eminent divine, at least of the second water, and I got to go to the drunks to learn theology. It has been glorious. Well, let's see. It's time for me to shut up, almost. I'll give you two stories, and then we're done. Little by little, little by little. You know, I used to think, dear God, how can I live and not drink? What kind of existence is it going to be? The book even answers that. But let me share with you two things quickly. The book says on page 132, I believe it's 132, unless they moved it. Yes, three sentences. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. And further down, so we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. And finally, on page 133, we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. In 1972, and I had been sober some 4 years, the boss man retired, and the monks come together in solemn conclave, lock themselves up, pray to the Holy Spirit, and proceed to vote for a new head honcho. And the rookies don't get to vote, only the full-fledged 33rd degree members get to vote. And of course they're very interested. And when they get through, they ring all the tower bells and everybody comes running. Who was elected? Who is the abbot? Who is the boss? And on August the 20th, 1972, the word went out that the seventh abbot of St. Bernard was Father Hilary. And the young monks are running up and down the halls of the monastery shouting all the way with AA. That says something very special to me about the monks of St. Bernard. And that's what this gold chain and this big fat ring are all about. In the Catholic Church, I am a very important person. When I walk, the earth shakes. You know, I can't tell you. I'll be coming down the church. You've seen the bishop with his top hat and his gold walking stick and his trains. I got all that. Lace below. And I'll be coming down the aisle and the organ playing and the trumpets, and I think, dear God, if they just knew who I was. And as I come in the church, I'll see one of my brothers and sisters in the program, and they'll go, and I'll go, and then it's all right. It's right where it belongs. A year later, I had the opportunity of going to the Holy Land, of walking in the footsteps of Jesus. It would never have happened if it hadn't been for AA. It was a very important tour, 15 bishops, you know, oh, God help us. And all I could do was weep at Bethlehem on Calvary, just wherever, all I could do was weep, just sit down and howl. And they all said, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? I said, shut up. AA told me if I wanted to cry, I can cry. I don't know if it was a gift of tears or what it was, but all I could do was weep. The thing that impressed me the most, of all the places, was Bethany, the home of Martha and Mary and Lazarus. You remember the story. The two sisters and the brother who gave the Lord weekend respite, evidently, whenever he got really tired. And the word is out that Lazarus is sick. The Lord's off preaching and gets the word to him. You can bet it's the Al-Anon Martha who sent the word. And he doesn't come. The apostles say, our friend Lazarus is sick unto death. No, don't come. Well, Lazarus dies, and that hotshot rabbi isn't even there for the funeral. Can you imagine Martha's attitude? To say that it was bad. And she's waiting. Finally, the Lord comes down the road. She's been eyeballing that road, and she shoots out. I wish you could read St. Luke and hear the sarcasm in Martha's voice when she confronts Jesus, and she says, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. That Martha, ooh, Lord, she didn't know who she was talking to. Thank goodness she was facing infinite compassion. And he looks at her and he says, Martha, thy brother will live again. And all of a sudden, Martha has that psychic change. And she's a good Al-Anon. And she says, yes, Lord, I know, I know. And they go into the house to condole with the mourners. And the Lord says, I'd like you to go out and see this grave. They go out to the cemetery, everybody with him. And he gets out there and he says, roll the stone, Dave, from the tomb. And Martha, psychic change hadn't lasted. And she's back in her Brie Al-Anon role. And she says, roll the stone back. He's been in there 4 days. You know how hot it is? By this time, he stinks. Ladies and gentlemen, I stink. But I surely do know what Lazarus felt like when he walked out of that tomb. Thank you so much.